Well, we've been doing life cycle assessment for about 10 years now, looking at production systems. And we try to apply. We have been applying that to water, water footprint, water use. Sarah wanted a little different twist on the title to look at water security and how LCA can be used for that to determine the impact of water recycling. A couple definitions. What is water security? Well, the UN describes it as a safeguard, sustainable access to adequate quantities of acceptable quality water for sustaining livelihoods, human well-being, and socioeconomic development, and preserving ecosystems. And of course, if you're United Nations, you put peace and political stability. Because people talk about water being the next goal, next oil, in terms of countries fighting each other for that resource. Life cycle assessment is just a systematic process. It's a research tool, which is a systematic process of studying environmental impacts on products and processes. For example, this was an earlier work we did with redbud, field-grown redbud, a 2-inch caliper tree. We defined the model, what the model system is, based on interviews, also best management practices, etc. And we come up with every detail that we can of a protocol for a production system. So we first of all create a life cycle inventory. Hi, Charlie. So we look at every piece of material that's inputted in that, every chemical that's used, every equipment use, every energy input, and Charlie wanted input for labor so he could talk about money. Now, but we can use life cycle assessment to look at a whole series of environmental impacts. The two that we focused on have been the global warming potential, or carbon footprint, and the other one is water footprint. So carbon footprint is the global warming potential of greenhouse gas emissions. And it's expressed in the kilograms of CO2 equivalent. So equivalent to the impact that CO2 would have on global warming potential. So for this 2-inch caliper redbud, we would see that for the global warming potential, how much of this happens at harvest. This is the material and equipment use. There it is. So at harvest, 65% of the carbon emissions assignable to that tree occur at harvest. Irrigation, not so much. If we look at the cost, again, 50% or more of the cost of this tree occurs at harvest. And then the liner is the other dominant feature, but where's irrigation on that? Very small. And then we looked at a series of container-grown plants. And we find that, voila, irrigation is there. It's a global warming potential, primarily because of either a diesel pump or electric pump pumping water. So that is a primary contributor of irrigation to global warming potential. But the container, plastic, and fertilization. So we're trading between a container system and a fuel system. We're trading equipment use for use of plastics. And if we look at those variable costs, irrigation is less important because of the high expense of a container and the substrate and the labor requirements for weed control and fertilization. So, to summarize this, these are the crops that we have worked on over the last 9 years. And B&B, we also have Holly on the East Coast and Boxwood on the West Coast in a number three container. Obviously, the costs are down as well as the global warming potential for that particular unit compared to a field-grown tree. Then we get to the herbaceous plant materials, such as 4.5-inch begonia and our young plant tray of foliage plants, 6-inch mum and a 6-inch poinsettia, which we are finishing as we speak. But we know that we produce global warming remediation machines that take in carbon dioxide and give oxygen off for us to breathe. And I could go on and on about that, but I won't. Talk to you later about it. So what impact does water recycling have on this system or these systems that we have described over the last 10 years? Where it's recycling it from a large pond, as in these two cases, or maybe an individual table or a flood floor used for recycling irrigation water. Well, we take those same crops and we say, how much water was pumped? And John Lee Cox tells me about 3,000 liters for a two seasons worth of a 25-gallon pot and pot plant. And then you see the other that we have calculated based on our work of looking at East Coast holly, West Coast boxwood, took a little bit longer to grow it. But this is the amount of water that was pumped. 2 liters per 4.5-inch begonia, but it's only a 6-week crop. So we'll come back to that, because now let's think about recycling. In these model systems, the 25-gallon pot and pot was near very small leaching fraction. None of it got back to a pond. The number 3-gallon container, 40% of that on our East Coast model made it back to the reservoir. The number 3 boxwood on the West Coast, 60% of the applied irrigation made it back to the pond because of the bed that was designed with deep gravel and a significant piping tiling system to get that water back to the reservoir. And for a 4.5-inch begonia, no recycling, but not an issue. Go down to the 8-inch mum, where we had 40 liters per container, but zero recycling, because again, drip irrigation, low leaching fraction, didn't make it back to the pond. 6-inch poinsettia using flood floor as well as boom. Then you had 0% during misting, 10% during the boom irrigation, and 75% during flood floor that was returned to that reservoir. So, recycling water does some things. It reduces the amount of water that has to be added to the system. Therefore, you reduce the consumptive water use. And we'll talk about water use, consumptive water use, and water footprint shortly. So we also reduce our pumping requirements to recycle water, and especially pumping to get more water into the system, as well as reducing our water footprint. So what effect does recycling have on the global warming potential of these crops? Not so much. If water is pumped from a catchment to an irrigation reservoir, like Bruno was talking about in his presentation, then on the systems that we've looked at, that's going to be either 2 to 6% of the global warming potential of that whole crop. So it's not contributing a whole lot. And costs less than a penny a plant for pumping that would have been increase over a normal pumping just for recycling. So there's really no increase in global warming potential of pumping recycled water if the catchment reservoir equals the irrigation reservoir. So recycling has very little impact on global warming potential of this product. But we have to think about some other things when we're talking about recycling this water. We have to have space on site, and sometimes that's a limiting factor for some of our growers. And we have to have the cost incurred to provide that storage of recycled water. Recycle means storing for next use. So that adds cost in terms of looking at water treatment, such as filtration and chlorination. Now, if your water source needs a lot of filtration, needs a lot of chlorination, then you're not adding cost or global warming potential to that product. But if you're starting with clean water and you add some trash to it by recycling, carrying leaves back with it, etc., then that becomes the issue. So the required treatment can also affect global warming potential because, you know, chlorine has a carbon footprint as well as the injection of that. Also thinking about recycling and what that costs in terms of amount of water use is if you have a reservoir, that means water's leaving if it's just sitting there. You have evaporation from the surface of the pond that affects by sun and wind and humidity and the season and all those things relative to what makes water evaporate. It rates directly to the evaporative pan daily evaporation. But globally, we're talking about 2 meters of water a year to be evaporated off of that reservoir surface. So water security based on this is I want access to enough high quality water every time I need it. That's called security. And Bruno's example is I want a week's worth in a pond. So if somebody cuts me off, I got a week to do something. So recycling also reduces the demand for water, but the storage storage is necessary to increase water security even if you weren't recycling it, if you follow that. So storage increases water security, which is the ability, then I have the storage and I have the ability to recycle, and it ensures adequate water on hand for when I need it. But it's at a cost for that reservoir or a tank. But increased irrigation efficiency, John, decreases water needs as well. So it is a three-legged stool, so to speak, in terms of the impact on water security of storage, reduced irrigation, increased efficiency, reduced irrigation, and the overall amount of water you're applying. Now, how that relates to a water footprint, it's very similar. It's talking about impact. You know, that's the footprint there. It's talking about impact of our operation on water quality and as well as water quantity. And it's similar to the concept that I described earlier with the carbon footprint. But we have competitive uses for this water, for irrigation, drinking water, ecological requirements, for the solution pollution is dilution concept, as well as the habitat ecosystem that we are dealing with. So we have competing uses for this water. And so water footprint was established as an international standard to compare water use, if you will, or impact on local water. But it's been done on an international basis in a specific method to look at consumptive water use. And ideally, it leads to practical improvements, just like carbon footprint. So water use is what we talked about in terms of what water we pumped, what water we added to the system, that's water use. Consumptive water use adds a different element to that. If we contain it, we own it. If the water comes into that site, whether we use it or not, but we contain it and it doesn't go on down the stream for the ecosystem services and the next grower to use, then that is consumptive water use. So that varies with location as well as time of year, what that would be. Water scarcity, there are numbers for water scarcity for every major water basin in the world. And so you can see in the United States, we have quite a range of high baseline water stress or water scarcity versus low. And this is an annual average. The current model right now, accepted in 2017 by the scientists of the world working on this, mainly the leaders of this area, Hofstra procedures were used, which is similar to this, up until about 2017, from 2011 to 2017. But then this is the WARE program, the water available water remaining after the basic system has been implemented, which includes ecosystem and population. This sets a global water scarcity average index of 1. So every month the world average is 1. and you compare all these other river basins to what that global average would be. So right here in Maryland, John, we're looking at in January, we're half of what the global water stress is. But in July and where we're sitting here in August, the normal is 80% additional to what average would be than the annual average. Bruno, you got 10 times the global water scarcity in your area in August. So how's that work? Well, every piece of product that I put in the production has an embodied water footprint. Tidbit, it takes a gallon of water to produce the plastic for a bottle of water. So that gives you a concept of, and it's like 2.4 kilograms or 2.4 liters for a container of water used for that container production. So we have an embedded water footprint, then green water footprint, gray water footprint, blue water footprint, total water footprint, and then we'll talk about that. Green water, that is a calculation of the volume of irrigation that is avoided if I have rainfall. So if I need 3/4 inch rain, a 3/4 inch irrigation on a daily basis, I get a 1/4 inch, so what? You know, it doesn't sort of replace that irrigation event. So I still have to irrigate. Blue water footprint is rainfall that I capture, or water that I add from a stream or a well or a lake, larger reservoir. So if I capture it, I own it. It's part of my water footprint. Gray water footprint is the volume of water it would take to dilute the water leaving my site to acceptable levels, whatever those acceptable levels are. Most of the people we're dealing with on our models, that would be really, really low. Because most of them are a closed system unless they have, you know, a major rainfall event. And then by the time that is enough water from that major event, we're going to dilute it as it goes over the spillway. So that's not true for everything, but that is a general observation, I think, or a statement to make. So if the water goes through our nursery and into the stream, I didn't capture it. It's not my part of my blue water footprint. So, if we look at the consumptive use characteristics of water type, we might have blue water, gray water, and green water. And this is actually something that's fairly close. We just plugged in something for gray water so it would show up. But if you take that blue water here, where is it? And you divide that, look how much is from evaporation versus irrigation event. So, back to this table again. It's just smaller, so you can't see it as well. But we have water use that we saw in the last time, but we added blue water footprint, which in our cases is a dominant portion of the water footprint. So on the East Coast, we pump 1,400 liters of water. We recycle 40% of that. We used 860 liters of water, and that had a water footprint of less than that, 180. Why? Because we compared that to the rest of the world, and we're okay in terms of international water footprint. So it's important when we're studying these things to report two items. One, consumptive water use, and two, water footprint. Because one without the other can lead to confusion, at least, if not poor interpretation. So, recycling impact on water footprint. It reduces the amount of water that has to be added to the system, therefore reducing the consumptive water use and ultimately the water footprint. It increases slightly, in some cases, the global warming potential due to extra pumping, but that, in our cases, these models have not played a major role. It requires storage for recycling, but storage also means water security for a crop on a daily basis. Questions? That's kind of like taking a sip of water out of a fire hydrant, wasn't it? Yes, John? Well, it's very young science, and so no, we really don't have a track record. And besides, the methods have changed three times since I've been involved with this, so it is an evolving method. But expressing it on a monthly basis takes out a lot of the variability in terms of annual averages. Yeah, the precision is just not there. I'm talking about these are calculated based on the major water basins of the world. Some of those are pretty darn large, some not so much. But, you know, it's a matter of scale. It's young. But they just got established it. It's one. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even give them that without giving them the consumptive water use. You know, for them to understand that. That's the reason I was saying they need to be presented together. Yes, Charlie?
So right now, the estimate for gray water is just a plugged estimate, right?
Right, in that one slide.
Yeah. So what other data is needed to calculate that in a more finite
manner? Our monitoring team has been working on that, but basically we need the concentration of the whatever target we look at that leaves the premises. And we don't have a good handle on that. Some of it's closed system, and the greenhouse we've been looking at is a no-brainer. We don't have gray water. If it doesn't leave the system, we don't have gray water. We're just recycling within the system. Well, either way, we can get the dilution.
That's true.
To get it back down to a level. So the question from water footprint, or gray water footprint, is how much water would it take to add to what's leaving in order to make it acceptable?
Well, so that's based on water quality parameters that are designated. Like in California, we have basin plans.
You have what? I mean, by the time, in all the systems we've looked at, Charlie, it's mostly a closed system, and almost all of them had more capacity to handle the water. I remember early years when I was still in Florida, Wyatt's Nursery, local EPA said all you have to do is capture the first 1 inch of rainfall. Because after that, it can go around the spillway, and we're not going to have any impact on that stream down there. And that's still true today, really, whether or not they follow that rule or not. But as long as you can capture those first a bit of rainfall, of runoff from your site, then you're pretty good.
Well, it's the best plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and for our use, we can give us a number and we can use it. What's leaving the nursery? Now, when we're looking at water footprint for a nursery, for example, we are looking at the water that's captured, and so we're talking about a watershed. And even if it is our neighbor that's contributing to that watershed, we're still capturing that water, what the potential for capturing that water is to create that water footprint that we capture, if you will. That's Josh. We, Josh. Other questions? All right.